I'm going to start off in darkness. But I can't see what I'm reading, so hang on. I'm going to go towards the light over here. I'm at the back. I read perhaps one of the most beautiful essays that I've read for a long time by a friend of Roland Barthes called Gérard Genet. He was famous in his own right for thinking along similar lines. Roland Barthes was his mentor and his friend. And after Roland Barthes' death, Gérard Genet picked one line from an essay by Barthes, and he turned this one line into this beautiful elegy for the passing away of his friend. So I wanted to pick apart this essay by Gérard Genet. And at the beginning of the essay, Genet writes that they met, he and Roland Barthes, in a cafe on Place Saint-Sulpice in Paris. And that is where I'm going to start. So, in the darkness, because it is nighttime. Hang on, I can't quite read what I've written. I am sitting in the Café de la Mairie, a little towards the back in relation to the terrace. An 86 goes by, a 70 goes by, full. Lights turn on in the cafe. Outside, the dusk is at its height. Outside, I can barely make out the faces. Colors blend, a darkness that is rarely lit. Yellow patches, reddish glows. The bells of Saint-Sulpice have stopped ringing. Night, winter. A man carrying carpets. I can barely see the church. My short-sightedness, my myopia. On the other hand, I see almost the entire cafe and myself writing, reflected in the window panes. It is still raining. I am drinking a Vittel water, whereas yesterday I drank a coffee. How does that change things? I am sitting in the Tabac Saint-Sulpice. There is a fine drizzle. Has the Fontaine Saint-Sulpice special changed? It was fresh cod yesterday. I'm too far away to make out what's written. We'll have to listen now to the blind. I am sitting on a gloomy afternoon in a cold back room of the Fontaine Saint-Sulpice Café on the Place Saint-Sulpice. It is a sad room, as I said, rather cold, occupied by a quintet of bridge players. I install myself at a table. I eat a pair of sausages and drink a glass of Bourgueil. I've been trying to pronounce that. Is that right? Bourgueil. There is one window. There is a slight change in the light. An Englishman enters the room and orders a coffee. His coat is as long as he. The light is beginning to fade, even if this is barely noticeable. The wind dispels the rain that has accumulated on the cafe awning, waves of water. I have been sitting here for a few minutes. Unsatisfied curiosity. What did I come here to find? My memory is floating. What difference between the writer who writes the work on the first attempt and another who manages something only after several aborted attempts? One has no need to practice, the other practices incessantly. The cafe is almost empty. More people are walking in the Saint-Sulpice Rue de Rennes direction than in the Rue de Rennes Saint-Sulpice direction. A confession. I have never been to Place Saint-Sulpice,
So these words are written by someone else. So what does it mean to speak with someone else's voice in me? Who speaks in me? Whose voice utters them? A man wants to enter the cafe, but he tries pulling the door instead of pushing. It is you, a ghostliness. My memory, though, is weak and hazy, but I strip you of all your possibilities. Will you have dinner? You look at me as if I am attacking your freedom. You have work, of course. A conflict. My time devoted to you, whom I love, my time to think about you, to be affected by you, at times overwhelmed by you. It is my role to expose you, that part of you that is the private you, which coincides in the back room of the cafe with the public you, the one in your spoken writing. Two fantasies. One, I have a little studio somewhere, a place to go. Two, the fantasy of going away to a place where I can work intensely, a retreat with a back room that protects without being a trap, a back room on the Place Saint-Sulpice. The back room on a dusky, gloomy afternoon. No problem of noise, no comfort either. It is an ascetic place, not aesthetic. You speak to me of the past, an icy wind on the Place Saint-Sulpice. You are on your way to the Lycée Montaigne, you say, whereas now you don't get cold on the Place Saint-Sulpice anymore. The world remains equivocal. You take your leave. I'm sorry, I have to write. I am not convinced. I do not recognise the work. The work exists only for it to be frittered away. You sitting in the cafe, you who lives without writing, you the writer, you who will get talked about, who will have been discussed. I, the witness of you, who consider myself to be I, the one who is writing, the one who is in the process of writing. A quick change between Saint-Germain-des-Prés on my street and Place Saint-Sulpice a few metres away. This is a change that is as difficult as changing key, or to put it another way, to disappear but still be close, because all it takes for a man from Saint-Sulpice, in other words from Saint-Germain, to feel he's somewhere else entirely, is to go and have coffee at the bar of a cafe in another neighbourhood. And it is a gloomy day in Paris, somewhat cold, raining, yet we are both full of the promise of our friendship. And I, too, tell you how I had strolled across Saint-Sulpice to meet you, and I confide that I would like to have a place here. And then you tell me about the priests of Saint-Sulpice, a story that begins to reverberate with the warmth of our friendship. Whenever I cross the square, you say, even though the wind cuts through me in the winter, and when the priests come out of the church, I feel that the storm will catch in their cassocks and sweep them into the air. In order to grasp the key to this neighbourhood, and especially the square, which stands at its heart, you have to have seen this black throng coming and going with your own eyes, pausing and surging to and fro in the quartier, and merging noiselessly with the sheer silence of the many bookshops. You listen for the silence. We are occasional friends, seeing one friend at a time, dispersing them out so that attention arises when we meet. This kind of friendship is by definition intermittent, and no one without pedantry can determine its optimal or even its minimal frequency. The intermittent friend is not one who keeps up a friendship intermittently, but one who only intermittently takes up the friendship. A friend who definitely renounces, and by this not only stops, but denies ever not having been a friend. What defines a friend is less the constancy of the friend than the constancy of the friendship. One does not stop having been a friend if one stops being one. To be a friend, do I have to keep up a friendship with you without intermittence and without final interruption? It is a cold back room, or rather it is a back room without warmth, in a certain café on the Place Saint-Sulpice, so that the back room is not the thing I most remember, nor even the café itself, but the feeling of coldness. It is not specifically coldness, but a lack of warmth. Nonetheless, this feeling of coldness is further qualified by the backroom circumstance of the meeting. By the time of our meeting in the cafe, you have already turned the page. You have moved on, and yet still to disappear entirely. You answer my questions with a few evasive words, yet you are still listening silently to me with patience. Perhaps it is not you yourself, as I am reading your text, which I have, I must say, read and keenly. Perhaps it is not you sitting here at all, though your text remains for me connected to our meeting on that day at the beginning of December, and it remains for me inseparable from your imminent, as yet to happen, disappearance, and from what, very personally, I feel about it. Perhaps I should say this more tensely and with more doubt. When I write these words, you will have been gone. When I read your text, we are still to meet. But we do meet, and reading your text,